Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well-Armed Radio, where freedom is our very best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly vigorous, relentless, and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. My pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well-Armed Radio, and encourage you to be a part of the show tonight, if you so choose, with your calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation. 563-999-3787 is the show number, 563-999-3787. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And as always, first 50 minutes of the show is open line, even though most people listen by podcast, so we don't get a lot of live listenership, so we don't get many calls anymore. But we do have Lon in the chat live. Lon, great to have you with. That's another way that you can interact with the show tonight. You can log into the Blog Talk Radio chat. You can comment on the Well Armed Radio MeWe page, and or you can call. Yeah, that's your options. Did I start the show with the warning yet? I'll start the show with the usual warning. No sacred cows here. I think I already gave you that warning. So here we are, January 16th. and midway through January, and I don't know about other parts of the state. Here in the southeast part of the state, we've had very little snow for this time of the year, so it's kind of an unusual winter in that regard. Been pretty much cold as a typical. I'd say the temperatures have been, you know, your standard winter fare, but the snow cover's been less. Although I'll say, you know, it's funny, we go hiking every Saturday. We just took an hour and 15 north to the Northern Kettle Moraine, where we usually go hiking on Saturdays. And they got way more snow up there. I mean, it's only an hour north, but just a significantly larger amount of snow. You know, not like feet of snow, but I mean, we probably hear, I mean, my lawn, for example, just only where it kind of, and again, it didn't really drift, but only where there's, you know, a little bit of a larger pile, you know, kind of where I shoveled the driveway. And have I snowblowed? Yeah, I think I snowblowed once this year. So where I shoveled the driveway and where I snowblow, so it had the thicker covering there. There's still remnant snow there, but the regular grass is kind of all poking through the normal part of the lawn. And we had some warm weather last week. But yeah, you get up to like, we were by Green Bush, Glen Beulah. It's kind of near Plymouth. Pretty much a little bit southeast of Fond du Lac, a little bit west of, kind of between Fond du Lac and Sheboygan or so, a little bit south of there, midpoint between those and just a little bit south. And yeah, they probably have, we were in the by the Greenbush Trails, and they probably have, I don't know, 6 inches of snow. The top few inches were really, really fluffy, so not too hard to walk through, but yeah, it's just been a weird winter, and I don't know if there's anything really in the forecast. I mean, it's flurries out there right now, but yeah, I'm not sure what you guys in the other part of the state had. I think there was a snowstorm that missed the south this past week, and yeah, we're just sitting here, you know, on a relatively, that's why I don't own a snowmobile, because, and of course, some people that own snowmobiles, they just drive north for the weekend and get to use them all they want, but yeah, it's, This part of the state, I mean, there's some beautiful trails. There's a beautiful trail system in the Northern Kettle Moraine for snowmobiles. And, you know, I've snowmobiled down in Racine County, Kenosha County, Western Kenosha County. I've snowmobiled there, and there's some great trails there as well. There's great trails all over the state of Wisconsin. But yeah, just down here, some years you get snow and some years you don't. And I mean, we might, I don't know, have 6 weeks worth of the trails being open down here. I think there was one year not too long ago where the trails only opened for a week or something. And so that's what would be frustrating to have that as a hobby, snowmobiling and just, you know, never getting enough snow to use them for the trails to be open. But here's what we had tonight. We're going to talk about the crime in Milwaukee. We're going to talk about the United States Supreme Court. We're going to talk about the gun bill package that's moving forward in Wisconsin. Before it hits the Tony Evers brick wall. And we're going to talk about little Dan O'Donnell from WISN. And I have this, if you've listened to the show before, I have this, like, I shouldn't say love hate. I think Dan O'Donnell does some great reporting, but then he just, I'm like 60-40. I like, and maybe that's not fair, maybe 70-30. I like 70% of what Dan O'Donnell does, but then 30% of the time, he just really gets on my freaking nerves. And so he interviewed Ron Johnson, and it's a head shaker. And I hope that's not the direction that conservative talk radio is going, you know, with the younger generation and these millennials and whatever. But I'll talk about that later in the show. But the first thing I was talking about, just a couple odd side things. It was interesting that I was reading the Business Journal, some off-topic, non-gun related stuff here. Reading the Business Journal, you know, the United States Supreme Court this week ruled that the employer mandate that OSHA implemented, like businesses with 100 employees or more had to require their employees to either be vaccinated or mandatory testing every week and blah, blah, blah. That was overturned by the United States Supreme Court. And then so the Business Journal, the Milwaukee Business Journal, total liberal rag, but I mean, it's the only thing for local business. It's got they're full woke. I mean, they've got all this diversity crap in there every week now. It's half the newspaper that it used to be, but nonetheless, there's still stuff in there that you don't find any place else, and so I read it every week. But they put out their emails, like when they've got one print edition every week, and then they put out their emails, on a periodic basis is breaking news, quote, breaking news happens throughout the week. And then sometimes they put out emails and they're highlighting articles that were in the print edition. But there was an article this past week, I think it was Friday, and it just, this is just the media, and I'm preaching to the choir here. You guys all know how biased the media is. But the first headline that the Business Journal puts out after the United States Supreme Court ruling, the headline was that the United States Supreme Court ruling puts employers in a bad spot, which is just freaking garbage. The ruling didn't put employers in a bad spot. The mandate put employers in a bad spot. But this is the eternal spin, the eternal propaganda from every, you know, mainstream media outlet out there, which is just relentless propaganda. Everything's got to be spun. Everything's got to be, you know, the mandate was something that businesses dreaded. I mean, look, if you want to require your employees to, so the essence of the article was that with the mandate, employers didn't have to take personal responsibility for requiring employees to get vaccinated. Instead, they could say, well, you know, I it's not up to me. It's, you know, it's OSHA requirement, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that took the employers off the hook and essentially was supposedly making the OSHA to blame. And the employer was just, you know, doing what they were required to do. Well, but the reality is that that's for businesses with over 100 people. So all someone would have to do in this tight labor market where the great resignation and pretty much everybody in the world, well, everybody in the country is hiring, from fast food to warehousing to trucking to healthcare to, I mean, you name it, like everybody's hiring. All you need to do if you're working for someone with more than 100 employees is go get a job in a place with fewer than 100 employees, probably get a pay raise, and not be subjected to the Fauci COVID shot. And so but it's just so funny that even the Milwaukee Business Journal, which clearly has no pulse of the majority of Milwaukee area businesses, and Milwaukee Business Journal, it covers the 5-county area, Milwaukee, Waukesha, Racine, Kenosha, Washington, and I think Walworth is kind of, and there's that fact, Washington, Milwaukee, Waukesha, Racine, Kenosha, Walworth, that 6-county area. Those are all usually covered with stories from the Business Journal. Not so much like Ozaukee County, but those, anyway, so proving that they have no pulse of their readership, they come out with that headline on Friday. And then it's funny because I'm sitting there and I made the notes in my show notes to make a mention about that, a little spin job by the Milwaukee Business Journal. And then I turn around today and there's another article. And I don't know, because there's two Milwaukee, there's the Business Journal and there's the Biz Times. I forget which was which. But then there was a headline today that came out. I might have already deleted it, but I'm going to pull my email back up here and see it, because I can't remember if it was from the same or if it was from a different one. Let me see. This one was from the Business Journal. I'm trying to remember if that other one was the Business Journal. That one could have been the Biz Times. But anyway, today the editor's choice, the headline, local companies relieved at Supreme Court ruling on vaccine. So yeah, they can't figure it out. On Friday, the spin was that the United States Supreme Court ruling is going to put businesses in a bad spot because they can't require their employees to get vaccinated, which I don't know how that puts employees in a bad spot. Then great. Then you don't have to require employees to get vaccinated. You can just keep on doing your business. But, you know, I suppose for employers who wanted to mandate the vaccine, maybe then it puts them in a bad spot, because then now they don't have that OSHA rule to point to. But yeah, now today the headline in the Business Journal is employers relieved. I mean, so which is it? Is it putting employers in a bad spot, or are they relieved? I mean, clearly, honestly, they're relieved. You know, any employer that wants to require it, you know, still can. You can require your employees to do anything they want. Anything you want, your employees can pick up and go somewhere else. But yeah, it just, I had to chuckle about that. So sticking here with Milwaukee, crime in Milwaukee is just spiraling. There was a shooting on Friday at the Shake Shack in the Third Ward. And there's crime's been spiraling for a while here in Milwaukee, but it continues to spiral with serious violent crime taking places where it never did. The Third Ward was is and has been a very trendy, you know, hipster area. The Shake Shack is a fast food. You know, I've been there once or twice. I don't get what the big deal is, but it's a fast casual or fast food burger joint that's you know, in the Third Ward. It's been there for a couple of years, a national chain, and it's in a, you know, like I said, we sometimes go there after we take the yacht out. We bring the yacht back, we dock the yacht, lift it out of the water, and go to the Shake Shack for a bite. We've done that at least once, maybe twice, but at least once this past summer, maybe it was twice. Friday, shooting at Shake Shack, some lady goes there. She's doing like one of those DoorDash, one of those food delivery things. She goes in to grab an order to take it somewhere. Someone tries to carjack her, I guess, tries to steal her car, tries to steal her phone. An off-duty police officer, an off-duty detective was in Shake Shack at the time. I don't know if he drew his gun to try to help, or he just went and verbally tried to intervene or what. I mean, I'm assuming if this carjacker was armed, he would have drawn his gun. But anyway, so the cop gets shot, and then the perpetrators jump back in the stolen car and drive back to the north side of Milwaukee, where they're chased and you know, cornered in an alley, and I think a couple of them at least were arrested. I think I heard there might have been a third suspect who was still on the run, but that's at the Shake Shack in the Third Ward. I mean, again, we're not talking about the north side here. We're not talking about 35th and Malvina. We're talking about a very trendy place in town. This past summer, Water Street, shootings on Water Street, multiple shootings on Water Street, you know, just a few blocks from the Fiserv Forum. And I think it was on nights when, was it nights when the Bucks were playing? I think it was, I can't remember. I think it was on nights when the Bucks were playing after some Bucks games or something. They had shootings there. 116th and Greenfield. Now we're getting out here. 116th and Greenfield is right on the border of Greenfield and New Berlin. Not a bad area at all. There was a shooting there on Friday night or Saturday morning, right around there. And I mean, these are areas that were otherwise relatively safe places. And again, crime can happen anywhere. The Azana Salon shooting was in Brookfield, for Pete's sake. I mean, you know, carjackings happen all over the place. But it's just, it seems like it's more prevalent and it's getting worse, and no signs of getting better. You know, it's that's where we are in this country when you don't prosecute crime. I mean, it's the electorate is sick of it. Just with these stolen elections and such. And I honestly believe, well, not believe, I have a high suspicion that Wisconsin's election was stolen. Tony Evers, I think he won in the same manner that Joe Biden, quote, won in Wisconsin. You know, 20,000 vote margin all of a sudden coming in at the early morning hours, 2 or 3 in the morning in Milwaukee County. So I know the electorate is sick of it. The pendulum needs to swing back. Hopefully, if we get a red wave here coming up, the pendulum will swing back and we'll finally do, because this has happened before in this country, you know, whether it's not just Milwaukee, but it's across the country, these urban areas where they've gone soft on crime, their social justice, you know, not prosecuting unless it's essentially a murder. I mean, all these things. It's New York murders are spiraling out of control. And this has happened before. I think early 90s was the last time, and then they got tough on crime, and then, you know, it gets better. And so we're at that point where we're ready for that pendulum to swing back. If we have something resembling free and fair elections where the electorate can have its voice be heard, but that remains to be seen. But yeah, it's just, again, crime just spiraling out of control, even in otherwise safe places. And thank God for the positive outcome and the Rittenhouse verdict to at least continue to give us some confidence. I guess confidence is the right word. Some hope that self-defense is still respected in this country, because without that, I mean, you know, with the danger that we're certainly in from this unbelievable explosion of crime, you know, it, sorry, I'm distracted here by something on my security camera. I need to come back to that later. Anyway, with this unbelievable explosion of crime, it's fortunate that we have some hope that the justice system is still, because if Kyle Rittenhouse had been convicted, then it's essentially, you know, self-defense is dead. And with all this crime everywhere, it reminds you why we carry, and it reminds you why we're certainly fortunate that that case and the jury was able to see through the spin and the politics and all that other bullshit. The next thing I was going to talk about here was interesting, because I was looking at reading in the Business Journal, the Milwaukee Business Journal, and they've got some expert panel thing coming up. And it was funny because the CFO for Dick's Sporting Goods is going to be on this expert panel or something, that this round table discussion, this round table expert panel. And I thought that that was interesting because, you know, Dick's Sporting Goods famously came out deciding not to, you know, to get woke and stop selling guns. And with the CFO going to this event with the Milwaukee Business Journal, I started thinking, man, if I was there, my question to him would be if they regretted the decision to stop selling guns at the at Dick's Sporting Goods, guns and ammunition. And then a couple hours later here, I opened the Wisconsin Carry Facebook group and someone had posted a link to an article on the truth about guns. And the article says, Dick's Sporting Goods admits decision to abandon gun sales costs shareholders $250 million in revenue. Quarter billion dollars in revenue is what, according to this article, they've lost from Dick's Sporting Goods. So yeah, here, my question was answered. I sat there thinking if I was called, if I was at one of those round table where the CFO of Dick's was, and that's a question I'd pose to him. And here I get the answer to that question 2 hours later when I read an article posted in the Wisconsin Carry MeWe page. But yeah, Dick's Sporting Goods used to sell guns, lots of guns, and then the son of the founder decides to get woke and stop selling guns. I'm reading from the article. John Botch is the author. Again, this is on the Truth About Guns website. And after being hailed as a progressive, forward-thinking, responsible retailer, the company now admits that going woke and kicking guns to the curb cost it and its shareholders $250 million in revenue. And that's probably an understatement. When the pandemic hit, gun stores saw lines of people waiting to buy firearms, ammo, and accessories. Meanwhile, over at No Guns Dick's, corporate was furloughing employees as fast as their printers could pump out the pink slips. They sent 40,000 employees home when sales fell off a cliff and gun retailers were doing... here it says this, I'm reading from the article, it says gun retailers were doing land office business. I don't know if that's a typo, but rather than rolling in profits, Dick's now touts its new public lands chain, which it has created to replace many of its former Field and Stream stores. The new woke outlet sells premium priced, socially conscious outdoor apparel and gear. Don't tell their customers, a lot of it is actually petroleum-based, representing the company's latest new vision for the firm's firearm-free strategy. A Fast Company about the brand new brand covers now former CEO Ed Stack's fateful decision following the Parkland shooting, this is down in Florida, to stop selling what author Tlaib Visram calls automatic weapons. So anyway, they go on to talk about this. And the impact that's had on Dick's Sporting Goods. And not only did Dick's lose out on the sales that it otherwise would have expected, But then we've got the boom in sales because even prior to the pandemic, prior to the riots of 2020, guns were a significant portion of Dick's revenue. But certainly with the explosion of gun purchases and things, Dick's would have seen an even a larger income stream from firearms. So that was interesting to read today on the again, it's an article I came across from someone posting on the MeWe page. So here in Wisconsin, speaking of guns, there's a gun bill package. This gun bill package that's been working its way through the Senate and the Assembly. These are, gun bills are essentially the same ones that the Senate and the Assembly ran away from in 2018. Yeah, you know, those gun bills, the Senate bill, I think it was Senate Bill 69. It was Senator Craig's gun bill that would have allowed, well, it would have been concealed carry. It would have allowed school grounds carry. I'm trying to think if there was any other pieces that were on there. This one, there's even a little bit more. There's a bill. So I'm going to run through these. These gun bills and that of this gun bill package, they've all now gotten their public hearings. That's a part of the process that a bill needs to go through in order to be passed, is it has to have a public hearing. And there's been a public hearing on these now. They've been out of committee, and then they're in committee. They've had their public hearings, and some of them are now available for scheduling, which means that they could be called for a vote in whichever house they're in. The ones that you see, SB, that means that Senate bill. AB is Assembly bill. So SB 484, which is the companion bill to Assembly Bill 495, that's the school grounds vehicle carry bill. If that bill was to pass, which it won't, but if that bill was to pass, it would allow you to have a loaded firearm for concealed carry license holders to have a loaded firearm in your vehicle on school grounds. AB 498, that's lowers the minimum age for getting a concealed carry license to 18 from 21. Great bill there. AB 843, something about firearm education for high school students. Seems a little bit late to me. I think firearm education should be earlier in the curriculum, but firearm education should really come from parents, but we know all there's some you know, ninnies that don't. You know, that's the thing. Why do kids? Why can you leave kids alone with knives all over the kitchen and lighters all over your house? Because you taught kids not to pick up a knife and stab their brother or sister. You taught kids not to pick up a lighter and start lighting shit on fire, or you're going to burn the house down. It's the same as a gun. You teach kids if you pick up a gun and you stick your finger on the trigger, you can kill somebody. You know, if you were to teach kids that, we wouldn't have these problems of accidental shootings. It would be just like we don't have problems with accidental stabbings with kids. We don't have problems with, kids playing with matches is still, I guess, somewhat of a problem. I think that occurs here in this country. I don't know how prolific it is, certainly something that where education for kids makes all the difference in the world. So then there's Assembly Bill 841, which is another, I think it's a junk bill. Assembly Bill 841, it's one of these bills, it's essentially saying that firearm charges, they're trying to, it's one of these attempts to be a tough on crime bill, but it's really impotent. This bill basically says that firearm charges may not be dropped against a felon unless it's approved by the judge. And then the judge must publish an annual report talking about what charges were dropped, what gun charges were dropped. Because what we have here, especially in Milwaukee, is you've got these felons caught with guns. A felon caught with a gun is a felony in and of itself. And that's usually the first charge that's dropped when a individual who was arrested for something, because if you're a felon in possession of a firearm, you're usually arrested for something else. You're usually arrested for maybe it's a robbery, and then you have a gun on you. Maybe you're, I suppose you could be pulled over for a traffic stop and they find a gun on you and you're a felon. But usually you're arrested for something else and charged with something else. And then the felon in possession charge is out there, which as we've seen is often the first charge that gets dropped. It could be one of the most serious charges, but all of the violent crime, I shouldn't say all, almost all of the violent crime that occurs in Milwaukee and other places as well is from convicted felons. If you want to reduce violent crime, all you need to do is get that list of felons that are out of jail. It's a very small number of people committing the vast majority of crimes. A very small number of people that we know are highly, 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 highly likely to commit almost all the violent gun crime in Milwaukee. If you want to cut down on gun crime, look at the people coming out of jail. Look at the people that are on probation. Look at the people that are on, you know, that have been convicted of crimes in the past. And you're going to find the people who are highly likely to commit more violent gun crime. And therefore, if you were to try to, if you wanted to reduce violent gun crime, if that was your real goal of reducing violent gun crime, you'd ask yourself, how can we impact those people? These people who are convicted felons, how could we impact them? I mean, one, you could throw them back in jail. Two, these are people, if they're on some kind of supervision. I mean, I don't know the laws in this, but the first unfortunate thing is that Milwaukee uses the streets as a jail. Milwaukee County is where they treat criminals like victims, treat law-abiding citizens like criminals, treat criminals like victims, and they use the streets as a jail. And that makes law-abiding citizens collateral damage in this failed social justice policy experiment. But then what you have is these people getting charged with these crimes. If you wanted to reduce crime, focus on these convicted felons, maybe it's random searches of their house. Maybe there's some constitutional issues there, which is why this thing is so convoluted, because if they put violent people in jail, we wouldn't have to worry about them from a safety standpoint. But if they're on some kind of extended supervision, if they're on some kind of early release or whatever, as a condition of that, maybe they should have to submit to random home checks, because you're going to find guns and you're going to find guns in the hands of people who are going to use them to do bad things. All this attempt to try to make guns harder, good for law abiding, isn't going to reduce crime. You should focus on these people who you know are going to commit all the crime, and what can we do for them? Is it random searches? And I am just throwing it out there, but that's the ones to focus on. Those are the ones to focus on if you want to reduce crime, violent crime, because that's where all the violent crime is coming from. So this bill, Assembly Bill 841, says that firearm charges may not be dropped against a felon unless it's approved by the judge. Then the judge must publish an annual report saying what felon with the gun charges were dropped. This is just a junk bill. It's just going to result in charges never being filed for a felon with a gun in the first place, because police can arrest a felon with a gun. They can refer charges to the DA's office, but prosecutors just won't file them. Prosecutors will not file charges. The legislature thinks that it can force these charges to go forward, and by saying that they can't be dropped unless a judge approves it. So in other words, the DA can't turn around and say, okay, well, we're going to drop the felon with a gun charge, and we're just going to convict, if you plead guilty to operating without the owner's consent, you know, you were caught carjacking or stealing a car, and then you had a gun, you were charged with operating without the owner's consent and felon with a firearm. We're going to drop the felon with a firearm and charge you, or maybe they're charged with auto theft and felon in possession, and then they say, well, if you plead guilty to operating without the owner's consent, we will drop the felon in possession charge and amend the car theft down to operating without the owner's consent. And that's a very common scenario in Milwaukee. What this bill would do is say that you can't, the DA, the prosecutor, can't drop the charges of a felon with a felon with a gun. They can't drop those charges unless the judge in the case approves it. And then if the judge does approve it, the judge has to publish an annual report explaining or detailing all the felon with a gun charges that they dropped. But again, it's just a junk bill, because all that's going to end up happening is the prosecutors aren't going to file the felon in possession of a gun charge in the first place, because they know if they file that they can't drop it without the judge's approval, so they just won't file it in the first place. Because like I said, police can refer charges to the DA, but the prosecutors won't file the charges. And then you'll never even have a record of charges being filed. So what you know who this will affect you know, a 60-year-old convicted felon outstate, not Milwaukee, a 60-year-old convicted felon outstate who gets caught with hunting with a gun, because, you know, if you're a convicted felon, you can't have a firearm in Wisconsin. So there's people, they're 50, 60 years old. They haven't committed a crime in 30 years, but they're a felon. They're a felon. And so, but they want to hunt and they just do it illegally. They possess a gun illegally to hunt. But only the honest courts and judges will be affected. So you go out state to, you know, Washara County, and some 60-year-old convicted felon from his youth is hunting. He gets caught, is charged with being a felon in possession of a gun. And now that's the one, because these courts out state are going to take the law seriously, and they have not such a banana republic criminal justice system as they do in Milwaukee. And they're going to, someone, a felon gets caught with a gun, he's going to get charged as a felon with a gun. And then they're not going to be able to plead those down because of this law. So that, again, it's just a junk bill. It's the legislature trying to be tough on crime, but not realizing the laws of unintended consequences and what's really going to happen. But here's the thing with all this gun package of bills. Not only do Republicans know these bills won't pass, you mark my words, they'd never introduce them if they thought Evers would sign them. This gun package of bills are being moved forward only to try to grandstand for gun owners. You know, we're pro-gun and Evers is anti-gun tyrant. And again, don't get me wrong, Tony Evers is an anti-gun tyrant. But Scott Walker is the reason that these bills aren't law right now. And if the legislator thinks that Evers might sign these, if the Republican legislature thinks that Evers might sign these, they'd never send them to his desk. Because if Evers signs these, he's going to gain some cred from gun owners. So elected Republicans, they don't want that. They don't want Tony Evers to look good in the eyes of gun owners. This is all about playing the gun owners, playing the gun vote. Oh, look at Evers. We Republicans moved these bills forward and Evers vetoed them. It's such crap because the Republicans are the ones that scuttled these bills back in 2018. And these Republicans wouldn't even think of moving a bill forward that would make Tony Evers less hated by gun owners. So this is, again, just pure grandstanding. And remember, take this to the bank. Everything elected officials do, everything elected Republicans do, well, I mean, 90% of elected Republicans, but every action that 90% of elected Republicans take, they do it primarily for political advantage. If it achieves the advancement or restoration of rights, I mean, that's secondary. But the primary goal of Republicans, and this, again, 90% of them, this is state level, federal level, is political leverage to get them in power, to keep them in power. And, you know, you're being used. Republicans use the gun vote just like Democrats use the black vote. Republicans act like the second coming of Charlton Heston during campaign season, and then they tuck tail and run during legislative session, unless, like a drunk little man in a bar fight who's got a bouncer to keep him from getting his ass kicked in a fight, then now the Republicans are all tough, moving all these gun bills forward when they know that they're going to get vetoed by Evers. Why are they doing it? Because they think it'll make Evers look bad. They think it'll rile up the gun owners, get the gun owners mad at Evers. Oh, Evers vetoed these gun bills. These Republicans think they're so sly, so politically sly, to put this out there and put Tony Evers on blast. This is just like the Republicans in Washington, D.C., who passed that Obamacare repeal when Obama was still president, which then, of course, Obama vetoed. And then Trump gets elected president, and then they try to get the same Obamacare repeal passed, and they couldn't get it passed. Republicans who voted for it the first time when they knew Obama was going to veto it wouldn't vote for it the second time because they knew Trump would sign it. And that's the politics at play here. That's how these Republicans work. They want the politics. They're real tough moving legislation when they know that they've got a bouncer in the form of Tony Evers or in the form of Barack Obama that's going to keep these bills from becoming law. And when they think the bills actually could become law, then they won't move them forward in the legislature and get them to the governor's desk. And that's exactly what they did with Senate Bill 69 back in 2018 with Scott Walker. They made sure it never got to his desk. They didn't want it. And that's what they did. And so now it's so disingenuous for them to push this now, knowing Evers is going to veto it. But again, that's their political grandstanding. So the last thing I'm going to talk about here tonight, I got 20 minutes left in the show. So I don't know if anybody caught this, but Dan O'Donnell had an interview with Ron Johnson last week. I forget what day of the week it was, but as you may have heard, Ron Johnson's running for reelection, which is fantastic. Ron Johnson, I think, there's a handful of senators who are really true freedom chasing, true freedom by the patriots in Washington, D.C. And Senator Johnson's definitely one of them. Maybe, Ted Cruz sometimes seems like a ball busting freedom fighter, sometimes scares me. What is it? Is it Senator? I think it's Senator. I think it's Josh Hawley from Missouri. He seems like a pretty good guy. Rand Paul, pretty freedom-minded senator. And I have to think about it. Probably there's probably a couple more, a handful of other senators who are real true freedom fighters. But then you've got these all the rhino Republicans. But for Ron Johnson to run again, it's a good thing. He's a fighter. He's truly fighting for freedom. He's pushing back against the coronavirus propaganda. And so Dan O'Donnell so Ron Johnson declares that he's going to run again. The big to-do was supposedly that Ron Johnson said in 2016, that was his last, he was only going to run two terms. So when he ran he was first elected in 2010, and then he was reelected in 2016. And he said at the time, he said when he was originally elected, he was only going to serve two terms. And then 2016, supposedly that was his last campaign. Now with everything going on, he decides he's going to run again. You may have seen the commercials that he did. He explains why he's going to run again. But here's Dan O'Donnell on WISN News Talk 1130, which is, I think, syndicated on a couple other stations. I think it's syndicated on WIBA in Madison, and maybe even some other ones in other parts of the state. But he's on his interview, and he's doing this interview with Ron Johnson. And he's just taken him to task for breaking his pledge to only serve two terms. And then he boasts about it on the interview. And he says that as the interview is over, he goes, anybody who listens to that interview recognize that I didn't pull any punches. Those were some tough questions that I asked Ron Johnson. And, he's like just boasting about how there's tough questions for Ron Johnson. Now, if you've been listening to this show for any period of time, like I said, you know what I think of Dan O'Donnell. He's at his best when he's doing his investigative stuff, researching, connecting the dots, making a case. I mean, the kid's got a law degree, and that certainly contributes to that skill. But he's at his worst when he's trying to be something. He talks like he's doing a table read of a Shakespearean play. That's really annoying the way Dan O'Donnell talks. It's like he's always talking in Shakespearean prose. He's not good on the Second Amendment. And I can give you a couple examples. He guffawed and immediately agreed with a caller back when it was, I think it was Parkland shooting, when he said that we should raise the age to own a gun to 21 for long guns as well. Dan O'Donnell totally shit on Kyle Rittenhouse before the verdict was issued, saying, he should have never been there. He went looking for trouble. He made it worse. This is what Dan O'Donnell said. Yeah, if your neighbor needs help, help your neighbor. But Kyle wasn't even from Kenosha. And Dan was just parroting out the liberal bullshit en masse. And I think he got an earful from his audience on that one, too, because he said on a subsequent show that he'd been hearing from people. But that gives you insight into Dan's mindset. He's not pro-2A. He doesn't err on the side of freedom. He looks for an excuse to throw people under the bus like so many Republicans do on the Second Amendment. And he tries to twist his principles to fit his positions, which is very millennial of him. I remember when Dan O'Donnell tried to convince his audience that public money for the Buck Stadium was the free market at work because the free market made the Buck such a popular entity that they had the clout to ask for state money. And that was some pretty twisted logic because Dan's an NBA fan and he wanted to see the Buck stay in Milwaukee. But that was his logic. His logic was that the Bucks getting asking the state, getting public money, that is the free market at work, because the free market was at work when people patronized the Bucks, and the Bucks are so popular, and that's the free market at work. The popularity of the Bucks is expressing the free market, and that popularity gives the Bucks the clout to go ask for public funding. and that is the free market at work. Again, just totally convoluted logic. But so I just don't trust Dan because he's so shaky on the principled aspect of things. On a different note, he really spiked a football several years back. He was filling in for Vicky McKenna, and this was in the Paul Ryan primary with, if you remember, Paul Nealon, who of Delavan, a guy who was running against Paul Ryan, again, several years back. Again, this was a Republican primary, and Dan O'Donnell came on air the next day doing a victory dance and spiking the football because Paul Ryan just annihilated Paul Nealon. I think Paul Nealon might have got like 26% of the vote. And again, this is a Republican primary, though, and I commented on Dan O'Donnell's page at the time that I thought it was really bad form to spike the football in a Republican primary because Paul Ryan, has left lots of very dedicated true conservatives very disappointed. And though we all knew Paul Ryan was going to win, it would have been really nice to kind of send a wake-up call to Paul Rhino to get a shot across the bow that he isn't the conservative darling all the Wisconsin sycophants made him think he was. If Paul Ryan would have got a little bit of a run for his money there, he might have been a little on notice. Because I feel really vindicated of my previous criticisms of Paul Rhino, because I was criticizing Paul Rhino like before he was elected Speaker of the House. I was criticizing Paul Rhino, when he was elected Speaker of the House, and he was, and everybody's like, oh, he's so, you know, he's such a hardcore fiscal conservative, a Jack Kemp Republican. And I mean, we saw how he was so weak in helping Donald Trump in the first part of Donald Trump's term. And then he goes and Paul Rhino, I don't think he resigned. I just think he didn't run for, I think he finished his term, but he didn't run for reelection because he didn't want to be a part of the Republican Make America Great Again movement. And so anyway, Dan O'Donnell spikes the football, does a victory dance, slams anyone who didn't vote for Paul Rhino. And I took issue with his comments on Facebook, and Dan's response to me was, well, don't listen then. And I was like, wowza. You know, he was filling in. He was just a fill-in at the time, didn't have his own show, filling in for Vicky on her show. And he tells me, well, don't listen then. And I said that, I replied to him, and now I'm personal friends with Vicky McKenna, and I could have shared that with her. I didn't, but I just replied back to Dan online. I was on Facebook. I said, well, very well. It's really a shame. I really like Vicky's show. And then Dan turns around and deletes the comment that he made on Facebook to me, which is a total pussy move. I mean, look, if you say something you regret, apologize, but don't pretend you didn't say it. So anyway, back to Dan O'Donnell and his Ron Johnson interview. You can go listen to it. If you Google Dan O'Donnell podcast, it was last week. You'll see it in his podcast descriptions. It'll tell you which days, or excuse me, what topics, who he interviewed on what days, what the subjects of his shows were. And you could listen to the podcast if you wanted to go back and listen to his interview with Ron Johnson. So his interview with Ron Johnson, I will say he swung the pendulum quite far, because Dan O'Donnell used to be the biggest brown noser in conservative talk. I mean, geez, he'd interview Leah Vukmir and his nose was so far up her ass, he could have Eskimo kissed her ovaries. And there was others, but pretty much any elected Republican, he was leg humping on the radio. And he swung away from that now that he's got his own show and he's a couple years in. And now he's taking Ron Johnson to task for breaking his second term pledge. And then after the interview, he says, you know, I think we'd all agree those were some tough questions. And then something like, you know, I'm going to ask the tough questions. I'm going to ask the questions that the mainstream media would without the overt bias. And here's the thing, though, is that, you know, as conservatives, we don't need the mainstream media without the bias. Dan O'Donnell has limited minutes to broadcast on his show. Why not focus all that time on the topics that the mainstream media won't? The mainstream media is going to focus all their time on Ron Johnson's pledge. Oh, Ron Johnson said he was only going to – Ron Johnson breaks his pledge to only serve two terms. And Danny Boy doesn't need to – Danny Boy O'Donnell doesn't need to spend all his time on Ron Johnson's pledge. I mean, big deal. What about the real issues in D.C.? What about what's really going on in D.C.? You know, our freedoms are being stolen by Democrats and pimped out by Republicans. Danny Boy should be going where the mainstream media won't in his interview with Ron Johnson, not just go where they want you to go, but without the overt bias, because the mainstream media wants to talk about Ron Johnson's pledge. So, Dan, we don't need the mainstream media without the overt bias. We need to go where the mainstream media won't go. And this is like, you know, when Dan says he's going to ask the questions that the mainstream media would, but without the overt bias, that's like me saying, I'm still going to do stories on gun control after a mass shooting. I'm just not going to put the anti-gun spin on them. Instead, I should be doing stories on the Carly Bowdens of the world, the nurse who could have saved her life, but for an employer who prohibited her from carrying. That's the story the media won't do. That's the bias by omission and the selection bias. So Dan O'Donnell isn't solving the media problem by playing into the selection bias, letting the libs dictate the topic du jour, and then just being more objective when he does the questioning on those topics that the libs want us to focus on. So Ron Johnson did a great job in the interview, but I mean, Danny Boy, my opinion, I think Danny Boy knows the mainstream media listens to his show, and I honestly think he's more interested in being the voice of Dan O'Donnell instead of being the voice of his audience. You know, do you really think that Dan O'Donnell's audience wanted him to ask Ron Johnson tough questions about breaking his pledge? No. But use Rush Limbaugh as an example. Rush Limbaugh was the best in history because he was the voice of his audience. Rush said what his audience thought, but had no platform to say. Rush expressed what his audience felt, but hadn't formed the fact-based arguments to communicate. That's why Rush's audience were called ditto heads. And so do you think Dan O'Donnell's conservative audience was saying ditto to the tough questions he was asking Ron Johnson? Hell no. They were spitting at the radio. Rush Limbaugh was the voice of his audience. That's why he never used his time to bash Trump. He never used his time to criticize Trump. He never thought about it being his job to ask Trump tough questions, which I think is really arrogant as fuck of Dan O'Donnell. It's his job to ask Rojo tough questions. I mean, give me a break. Ron Johnson's a real conservative. I mean, ask the phony conservatives the hard questions. Ask Robin Voss why he sold out gun bills when Walker would have signed them. That's a legitimate tough question that Dan O'Donnell's audience wants to hear. Ask Robin Voss why he hasn't done more on election fraud. That's what Dan O'Donnell's audience wants to hear. Mark Belling sent a letter to Voss asking why he hasn't disciplined Representative David Bowen, a Democrat who participated in a violent riot outside Joseph Mensah's girlfriend's house, where a gun was shot into the house and then lied about it. Do you think Dan O'Donnell's audience gives a shit that Ron Johnson broke his two-term pledge? They couldn't fucking care less. But, oh, Danny Boy, he's going to ask the tough questions about Ron Johnson breaking his pledge. I mean, it's just a fucking crock. So, again, I think that perhaps Danny Boy is more interested in trying to gain cred with the libs who listen to his show. And I know a lot of libs listen to WISN because they spy on the enemy. It's what they do. But I think it's highly likely Danny Boy is more interested in trying to raise his stature, seeking the admiration of libs in the mainstream media, instead of trying to provide a product provide a product the conservative audience wants to consume. Excuse me. Now, that's just my ever so humble opinion, jaded by experience and observation. But I hope that you understand my point there. You know, Dan O'Donnell, we can use conservatives that ask tough questions and even use conservatives that ask tough questions of Republicans, but not just these gotcha questions, not just these. We don't need tough questions of truly freedom-minded Republicans like Ron Johnson about why he's breaking his pledge. We could use some tough questions, again, to the examples I gave you here, to Robin Voss, to Scott Fitzgerald about why he's not being a little bit more like Marjorie Taylor Greene and a little bit less like Tommy Thompson. You know, Scott Fitzgerald was talking about how he's going to go to D.C. and he's going to be a maverick and he's going to, you know, help Trump. And of course, Trump, you know, got the election stolen from. But Scott Fitzgerald hasn't been making any vocal attempts to help Trump. That's what he said he was going to do. So that's a tough question that you can ask. That's a tough question that conservatives would like you to ask Scott Fitzgerald. But conservatives don't want you to sit there and pound on Ron Johnson for breaking his pledge. Give me a break. So, I don't know, it's just frustrating because that's the frustrating thing about being a conservative is you just, we got to take it from both ends. We got to take it from the libs, and then we got to take it from Republicans who on our side, who throw the Second Amendment under the bus, who want to puff up for the mainstream media and for the libs instead of puffing up for the conservative audience, the conservative people, like the average, Make America Great Again folks. They're the ones that delivered Trump to victory. So anyway, that's what we have for the show for this week. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Lon, great to have you on the chat here. And if you guys enjoyed the show, as I always say, feel free to shoot me an email. I always like hearing from listeners. Nick, N-I-K, at wisconsincarry.org. We're sitting here midway through January now, and I told you this a couple weeks ago, I'm super excited. I think we talked about this, that Trump social media is launching in February now, that I heard, and I'm super excited. It's really sucked ass to be banned from the only real prevalent social media, Facebook. And I sit here and when I see people who are on, Republicans are on Facebook and they haven't like attempted, they sit there and complain about Facebook. They haven't even attempted to go somewhere else like MeWe. It just makes me shake my head that they just have learned to be submissive little serfs, and not pushing back, because everybody knows about the big tech fascism and Facebook fascism. So again, I'm super, super excited for Trump's social media thing to come out. It's going to be great to really have a social media tool that I think is going to explode. It sucked being banned from Facebook. It's been difficult to use social media to Wisconsin Carry's advantage, but I see that all changing here with Trump's social media. I think conservatives are going to flock to it, and it's going to be something that I think is going to grow bigger and better than the Facebook, maybe even not even total numbers, but bigger than better than the Facebook group in terms of its effectiveness. Because we had 12,500 Facebook members in the Wisconsin Carry group. If we had 6,000 active members, not shadow banned, I think that would be real effective. So anyway, you guys have a great week. Carry on. Be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.